Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live. We are presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. We are preparing for the biggest fight card in the world. The Magnificent Seven. The last crescendo. Fights falling off one by one. Will we even make it to Saturday? I'm just kidding. It's still an unbelievable card. Chris Algieri is here with us. Resident world champion. All around. Mogul. Take that, right?
I thought you're gonna be like all around decent guy, but mogul. I mean,
mogul.
I'll take that. I like it. Media mogul, boxing mogul. I'll go with that.
Sunglasses mogul.
Yeah. Not a lot of sleep the last couple nights. I've been out and about traveling, dealing with some stuff. So I'm gonna keep the sunner shades on for this one.
I feel you there. Like I said, this episode is brought to you by PPV.com. Go ahead and order Tank versus Lamont Roach, which is quickly approaching. Go ahead and order The Last Crescendo. Better be Evan Bivol on this card. It will be carried by PPV.com. I'll be in the live interactive chat with some others.
Whoa, we're carrying this?
Absolutely.
Guys, absolutely. I bet you the people at home didn't even know that. So now they do.
Now they do. $25 pay-per-view. For what is one of the best cards of the year. No subscriptions.
A lot of value in that. A lot of value.
Oh my God! Value at the ass.
in the read. Nice.
Put that in the website.
Smoke it.
Yeah, put that on the PPV.com website. Value out the ass. $24.99. 11 a.m. Eastern. Maybe even earlier. Like it could be even earlier. The start of this pay per view. So join us. Get some coffee wherever you are. Put some. Adult beverages in your coffee. Join us. We'll be in the live chat. I'll be in there at some point. No
bacon,
subscriptions.
Eggs and beers. Bacon, eggs, and beers.
Bacon, eggs, and beers. That's what I did in college. Some of those early West Virginia kickoffs, 12 noon kickoffs were always fun. This should be an all-day affair. It's the main focus of our episode this week. We'll be previewing this mega card, which we've had some drama, Chris. Some fights have fallen out. Floyd Schofield. Mystery illness.
A lot of drama there.
Daniel Dubois. Mystery illness. What is going on out in Riyadh? I had a mystery illness for a week. I'm telling you, man, I think we're almost in like 2020 era in terms of illnesses that are out there, viruses that are out there. And no one's quarantining, of course. Everyone's out living their lives as they should. So, I mean, there's some stuff out there. We got two fights that we thought we were getting, we're no longer getting on this card.
There's a measles outbreak going on as well over in Texas. So we got like you said, great. there's a lot going on at the bird.
Weren't you just there?
I was, but I didn't touch any locals, so we're good.
Well, good. You escaped the measles.
Escaped the measles.
So where do you want to start? Like, we'll start with this Floyd Schofield drama.
Yeah, I was gonna say let's start with Schofield.
So Schofield's out against Shakur Stevenson. His dad had some wild accusations. A masseuse rubbed some type of cream on my son sent by Shakur. The passports being revoked. All sorts of crazy stuff coming from Floyd Schofield's camp, which has been par for the course for not just this fight camp, but a large part of his career. His dad runs his Twitter account. Just weird. I get weird vibes from the dad. I get, the kid I like. It's just another story in boxing where an overbearing dad is just like taking control of his son's career. Was looking forward to this fight. Was easily the most lopsided fight on the card. The dad posts a video of Schofield in the hospital because no one believes the dad or the kid because of the dad's antics. You know, it's Boyle-Croyd Wolf syndrome here. So Josh Padley steps in, a soft-punching Brit who was an electrician by day and a boxer by night. Opportunity of a lifetime. A lot to unpack here, Chris. Are you shocked that Schofield pulled out? Do you believe him? Is the dad crazy? He's not getting a payday out of this. Moral of the story. So
I was only shocked because of that last point you just made, the fact that he's passing up the biggest payday of his life, of his career.
$3 or $4 million, I've heard.
Really? Oh, geez. I mean, that, all right, now it's really bordering on insane, that the fact that you're not going to take this fight. But as I looked into this, I was less and less surprised about the news. Shakur said it. He did one of those interviews with Andre Ward, and he was saying, he was like, yeah, I don't think this guy wants to fight. I don't think he's going to show up. And he said something about, he had said that because he missed some kind of media arrangement.
He didn't go to the grand arrival and wasn't at the press conference, Schofield.
Right. But he also, did you hear this thing that he said that Shakur had stolen his passport?
Yep.
Yeah. So as soon as that came out, I was like, all right, these guys don't want to fight. That's insane. And then now to like this whole cockamamie story that a massage therapist from Team Shakur Stevenson rubbed something on him and then he got sick. And then you get that dramatic photo of him in the hospital bed and, you know, like, he can't fight.
There was like music over it.
And it was like 5 days before the weigh-in. Like, I'm just like, all right, this is all the theater of insanity and stupidity. And the fact that there's that much money on the table, even if it's $1 million, what are you walking away from? It's crazy. Go and fight the fight. I was looking forward to this fight as well because Schofield is an athletic kid. He's young, and he's just going to go and fight. You know, Shakur, obviously, but Shakur's not the kind of guy who's going to like blitz you and beat you up and break you down and hurt you and change your career. He's going to outbox you. He's going to stick and move. He's going to make you look bad. Whatever. The kid Schofield's young. He can come back from a loss, take that money and move on. But this, he threw his whole reputation in the garbage with this. What's going on here?
I couldn't agree more. That's what this sport is about. You have to step up when you're given an opportunity. He steps up to take this fight. He's pushed for this fight really hard. They go ahead and they make the fight. Big time underdog in it. And then the antics come out. You know, there's a lot of antics with this kid, like I talked about with his father. Just saying ridiculous things that, you know, these fans don't, boxing fans aren't stupid. Like, don't insult boxing fans. And with these cockamamie conspiracies. Like,
cockamamie. We got two cockamanies in this episode.
Oh, you
this
said that too. Nice. It's true.
It's a perfect description of what's going on.
Yes. Floyd Schofield Sr. is a cockamamie man. He is not to be taken serious. And it's unfortunate because maybe the kid is sick. Obviously, there's some type of sickness going around.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but to throw the blame on someone else, I mean, listen, that's libel. This is not ending here. With this right. happening. Like, not only did you leave the money on the table, you're probably going to lose money here.
Yeah, Shakur's attorney was like, you can't just say things like that. You can't accuse us of poisoning Bingo. You. Like, what is this, 007 movie? Like, he went in there and poisoned his opponent so he wouldn't have to, so Shakur wouldn't have to fight a plus 1400 underdog?
Dude,
give me
I
a break.
I just pictured the funniest like scene, like Mission Impossible, Tom Cruise style, like hanging above and like dropping the eyedropper into the water bottle. It's like, oh, we got him.
While he's getting massage that doesn't exist. The father didn't do the kid any favors. This ruins the reputation of him. This is not a good look for Golden Boy. This isn't a good look for Oscar De La Hoya, who always has a lot to say. I'm sure this won't be in Clapback Thursday. I'm sure they will toe the line and they already put out a statement. It's just hard to believe when the dad is throwing around crazy stuff like that. I want to believe every fighter. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, fighters get sick on fight week. Look at, no one's questioning Daniel Dubois. Because he's never done something like this. You know, he doesn't pull antics like this. He doesn't. It's all about your behavior. So if you're going to go ahead and come up with these insane conspiracies, boxing fans are going to question you. Moral of the story is Floyd Schofield's out. Josh Padley is in. This is not an easy thing to find a fight on 2 or 3 days notice in Saudi Arabia. So they hit up Padley, who has a win over Mark Chamberlain, who is a very light-punching welterweight, who's ranked 13th, I believe, or 14th. He's right in the same ballpark as Schofield in terms of ranking from the WBC. I think Schofield, obviously, is a lot more explosive, a lot more athletic. You know, this is another going to be a showcase for Shakur Stevenson. I was thinking maybe they would put him on a different card, put him on the boots card. But, you know, our guy Stevenson has horrible luck. Shakur Stevenson has horrible luck.
Guy, I made a very off-color joke. I said, the guy can't catch a break except for his hands. So I had to repeat it, even though I said it, you know, behind closed doors. But I'm glad that Shakur's actually taking the fight. I don't care who he fights at this point. Go get back in the ring. A guy like him, stylistically, he needs rounds. He needs to be busy. He needs to find that timing. He's got a guy in front of him who's not a big puncher, not really in a big risk. He can get his legs underneath him. So I actually like the fact that they're still taking the fight, not pushing it off for some other stupid thing to happen that Shakur doesn't get a chance to actually showcase his skills. So we still get a Shakur fight, not the fight we want, not a fight that's all that enticing, but whatever. We got one of the best boxers in the world back in the ring.
Well, I'm curious to see how he handles this Padley guy, because I think Shakur, this is the narrative we use before every single Shakur fight. Does Shakur need a stoppage here? Because he's so much better than his last couple of opponents, and he's so much more talented than him. You know the numbers by now, one of the best defensive fighters, but he just puts on these fights where he kind of puts you to sleep a little bit because he plays with his food or he doesn't take chances. That's going to be the case with Padley, who is not a hard puncher at all time. It's not going to give much resistance. It's not going to give any resistance to Stevenson. And we'll just preview this fight right now since we're talking about it. Shakur minus 4,000 favorite in this. Padley plus 1,400. But like, the Schofield fight wasn't much different. I think it was like 35, maybe 3,000, minus 3,000. It was like Shakur by stoppage.
Yeah, but no one was expecting Schofield to win, but it would have been entertaining. You know, he's an athletic guy. He's young. He's going to come forward. He's explosive. He's strong. You know, this isn't that.
No. Shakur by knockout is minus 400 on DraftKings. Shakur by decision is plus 175. So Vegas thinks that Shakur has a very good shot at stopping Padley, who's coming on, like we said, of 2 days rest, or not 2 days rest, 2 days notice. Padley has fought, I'm looking at his box rec, some of the most British names. Mark Chamberlain, Conor Lee Daughtry, Lyndon Chirkop, Clayton Bricknell.
Wait, go back. Lyndon what?
Lyndon Chirkop.
That's awesome.
Conor Lee Daughtry, Clayton Bricknell, Jimmy First.
The most British list of fighters ever.
He fought Jimmy First at the Bradford Hotel.
This sounds like a bare knuckle card from the 1800s.
Mark Butler. These are like early settler names. These are the names. This is
these Josh guys are on the Oregon Trail.
Yes. This is Josh Padley's resume. And no offense to any of those. I just want to have some fun. He's 29 years old, electrician. Awesome story. If you catch the interviews with him, with Ring Magazine's putting out, literally was working, getting done with an electrician day of work. And manager calls him. You're never going to guess what happened. They negotiate, change this guy's life. He goes the distance with Shakur. That's a win for Josh Padley. He gets stopped. Then we can say, nice. Shakur gets a stoppage, and we can stay. Let's stop messing around. Let's make this Shakur tank fight, because Shakur just has the horrible luck. I think Shakur is one of the most avoided guys in boxing right now. Say what you will about the Schofield situation, whatever it was. I think Shakur is the official boogeyman of boxing right now.
I mean, in terms of the way people are backing out of fights to fight him, even when there's big bags to be taken. It's hard to argue with that.
It's crazy. Insane. It's gotten to the point where these, you can go down a laundry list of guys that just do not want to step into the ring with him. Like you said, not going to get beat up fighting Shakur, but you will get embarrassed. You will get derobed. You will get your pants dropped.
But that's similar to how like Floyd was, right? Like Floyd wasn't going to like that's why McGregor fought Floyd, because it's like, I'm bigger than him. He's not really going to hurt me that big. He didn't pick Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao would have knocked McGregor's head off and would have hurt him, broke his orbital, whatever. Floyd's not that guy, but you got paid. And Shakur's not that guy either, but guess what? Now you're going to get paid, and it's still not happening. This is wild.
Official prediction, I like Shakur by stoppage, minus 400, not good odds there. Wouldn't touch this one, but I think Shakur gets the stoppage and makes a little bit of a statement. I think he's handled this pretty well. What's your prediction?
I really can't make one. I don't know anything about this guy. You know, I mean, he just could be tough as nails. People have good chins. You know, taken on short notice, because Shakur is a good body puncher, most likely he stops him. And I think Shakur is obviously smart enough that he's going to attack the body from a guy who's taken it on 2 days notice. I don't know how many, you know, crunches he was doing while he was installing light fixtures, but I would say targeting the body for a stoppage is probably the way to go.
Well, they said he was ready. I mean, it obviously is. He had to pass a certain
He's making 35, right? What's the weight going to be? Yeah, that's super impressive. So he's obviously
and safely. They said they had to make sure he was able to do it in the right way. So I like Shakur by stoppage. We'll see in that one. Our next fight that fell out, this is unfortunate. This was not a wipeout type of fight. This was a fight I was really looking forward to. Daniel Dubois has fallen ill, and he is out of his heavyweight title fight with Joseph
Parker. Oh, it's officially out?
Officially done.
Oh, so this is like breaking news. Like, this happened right now.
That happened about right when we sat down to record. Dubois is out. They're looking at replacements. Lawrence Okoli, David Adell, and Martin Piccoli, manager.
Oh,
has,
boy.
Martin Piccoli's manager has tweeted out numerous tweets to Turkey and the powers that be that my client, my guy, Martin Piccoli, will hop on a plane tonight. Don't have to worry about making weight. Piccoli wants Parker. Does Parker want Piccoli?
Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Parker took it. Parker's a madman. He'll fight anybody. He has fought everybody.
But this is his title shot, man.
He was preparing for a puncher. I mean, he's preparing for a puncher, and he's got one. That's really the issue, because now he's not fighting for a world title, and he's been trying to get back to being a world champion, because we forget Joe Parker was a world champion. I think a lot of people do forget that or didn't know that. So he's trying to get back to a title, but I don't know, man. Joe is a very confident guy, and he's got a great momentum, and stylistically, it is another big puncher. So it wouldn't be the craziest swap in terms of technique and style.
Piccoli was supposed to fight in this May card in Times Square. Against whom?
Piccoli was fighting...
Whom?
You're picking up the English accent from...
I forgot who Piccoli was supposed to be fighting.
Ajagba.
Right. All right. Yeah, so they can scrap that. And like we said, don't have to worry about the weight. This guy is heavyweight boxing. It just comes down to Parker, who has, like you said, like perfectly curated his comeback to get to this point where he finally gets Dubois. Some people were giving Parker a chance in this fight. I was leaning more towards a Dubois late stoppage in a really competitive fight.
I was starting to lean more towards a Parker decision.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah, man, I was really looking forward to breaking this one down.
Yeah.
I mean, it was such a Parker plus 235. Parker decision was plus 400. There was some juicy odds on that one.
I would have put money on that.
Easily. I mean, there's some really good odds here in terms of underdogs, because a lot of these fights are really close, and we're going to have odds on all of them. This sucks. This really does suck. It kind of gives Schofield, it makes me think that maybe there's some type of bug going around. They're all in close quarters. They're not quarantining. Why would they? It's 2025. This stinks. And I give Piccoli the shot of that, like 15, 20%, if that. Even that's
a
little...
I that would be a huge risk. Not a ton of reward other than getting kudos from the boxing fans being like, you're a badass. But I think Joe Parker already gets that.
Piccoli? 2-0 as a heavyweight?
I mean, that's... I mean,
David Adeli?
It's at least a guy who is a name, a cruiser. You know, and for British fans, it's something.
Big D, David Adell.
I mean, listen, at this point, it's so close. It literally could be anyone. You're picking up money, and it's heavyweights, so they're still dangerous. So I think
you got to find someone to get there.
Yeah, but guys are going to be jumping a bit. Obviously, it's big money.
It's big money. It's not a title shot. It's big money, and
it's a tough fight though, because Parker's on a roll.
Parker is on a roll. We'll talk about him for a second. Comeback trail. Like I said, perfectly curated career comeback since suffering that loss to Joe Joyce in 2022. Before that, he had a pair of wins over Chisora, Junior Fa. He fought Dillian White. He fought Anthony Joshua. He was a world titleist in 2018. And since the loss to Joe Joyce, the win over Jack Massey, a win over Apuelu, a win over Simon Keane, the win over Wilder, and then the win over Zhang. And waiting in the wings, he doesn't really get a lot of publicity, doesn't get a lot of credit. He just like that spoiler. He was ready to play spoiler again against Dubois. So by the time this comes out, we could have the replacement for Parker. There's some names being thrown around. Bacoli would be really fun if this was like a UFC type of thing. We would have Bacoli already there. But, you know, this is still a good card. Like, there are still some awesome fights on this. Like, seven deep. You know, we're still getting better Bevan Bivol. Fingers crossed.
Do you think we jinxed it by calling this the best card ever? I mean, of course. We were screaming that from the rooftop. Of course you did. It was us. It was our show. We this is our fault.
Boxing fans, if you're an anti-Turkey guy, if you're an anti that, like, if you're just a hater, then you're like, yeah, see, told you. But
who the hell would do that? Whoever would be that
boxing fans? Boxing fans?
I'd like to headbutt those people.
Yeah, there's some just boxing fans out there that just can never be happy, that are just like, see, this is what I said. Let's just let the fights happen. They fell out because of illness. They've fallen out. Like, it's still a really good card, and we'll get to through it right now. Let's go to what should be the first fight of the night. I don't know if the order is going to change, but Joshua Buatsi versus Callum Smith. This is at 175 pounds. This should be the first fight of the morning, wherever you are. Buatsi, 19-0. His last five, he's got wins over Willie Hutchinson, Dan Aziz, Paolo Stepien, Craig Richards, and Richard Bolotniks. I have him currently as the number four light heavyweight in the world behind the main event, better be Evan Bivol and David Benavidez. You could potentially put Buatsi even number three because he's got a little more experience at 175 over Benavidez. Callum Smith, stud, 30-2, a little long in the tooth at age 34, has been in the ring with Beterbiev, has been in the ring with Canelo Alvarez, John Ryder, George Groves. You know what you're getting with Callum Smith. Buatsi, for some reason, still doesn't get like the full shine that he should. Love this fight, though, Chris.
I do too. This is a real sleeper. It's so early in the card, and the card's so deep, you kind of forget about it, but it's a fantastic fight. And probably not getting the notoriety it deserves, just like Joshua Buatsi does not get the notoriety he deserves. Mm. He's a guy who's been kind of working in silence, but he's excellent. I rate him super high. And I'm with you. I've got him easily in the top five, number four, number three, something like that, at light heavyweight, which is a super deep division. The issue with Buatsi, he hasn't had those big name guys. You know, the Aziz fight was like a cross the street battle of local guys.
Hutchinson, domestic dust up.
That's the term right there. And Hutchinson, who was pretty much on a roll as well, he looked really good in that Craig Richards fight. Mm-hmm. Was looking like a real promising guy, and they had a hell of a fight, which was a split decision. I'm not really sure why, but Buatsi, I thought, looked really good and showed out that night. So again, a guy that was a tough fight and a good win, but not a lot of people would recognize it. This is different. Callum Smith is a well known entity, and he's a very dangerous guy. So a win here, I think, could propel Buatsi into the stratosphere that he's been looking to be, where he actually does deserve. But the thing is, like, when we're talking about Buatsi in this fight, if you favor Buatsi in this fight, he's got to do something that we've never seen him do before. And he's got to do it against the best opponent of his career. You know what I'm saying?
Be aggressive?
Not even necessarily be aggressive, but just like, he's got to do it at this level. Like, he's fought good guys. We know that. But like, this is a different level. We've never seen him be successful at this level. So he's going to have to show us something that we have yet to see, that he is yet to do. Whereas Smith is like you said, you know what you get with him. His right hand's a rocket. His left hook will decapitate you. And he's big. He's long. He's tall, even for light heavyweight. So, yeah, good fight. But I'm a Buatsi guy, so I'm gonna back him.
Buatsi is a -205 favorite, according to DraftKings. Smith, +165, a close fight, according to the odds. Buatsi by decision, +110. Smith by decision at +320. Those are some fun odds to play with. Buatsi can find himself, if he wins this fight, he can potentially fight Benavidez. If Bivol wins the main event, which we'll get to in a second, there will be a third fight. And at that point, you got Benavidez kind of waiting in the wings. Buatsi waiting in the wings. Those two could potentially fight. This is now or never for Buatsi. For Smith, it's now or never for him too. I'm sure he wants to just keep the, and this guy was accomplished a lot. He was, you know, a unified champion at 168, moved up to 175, has made a lot of money in his career. I'm sure he wants to keep on making that money. You know, he's getting featured on these Riyadh cards, and he wants to keep that going. So there's a lot on the line here. Really fun fight, light heavyweight. I will go with Buatsi by decision, which you get a +110. Chris, are you going with Buatsi by decision as well?
I think decision, yes.
All right, and you can get that at +110 on DraftKings, so that's a pretty good odds. Moving to the second fight of the night. I don't know the order, so don't quote me on this. Zhilhai Zhang versus Caballero. Another fight completely under the radar. Now that this heavyweight fight is potentially off between Parker and Dubois, what's going on with that? A lot more eyeballs will be on Zhang and Caballero. Very tough fight to handicap. Very tough fight to pick. Zhang got the experience, of course, has the knockout power. Caballero, knockout power as well. Athleticism. Young type of fighter. Zhang has been in there with
youthful exuberance.
Exactly, Chris. I think that's the main thing in this fight. That is the main variable is Caballero's youthful experience.
Exuberance.
Exuberance. Youthful experience doesn't even make sense, Dan.
No, that doesn't
youthful,
make sense.
I was going to say youthful.
That's an oxymoron.
Right. I was going to say like youthful with power, which is a great combination to have as a heavyweight.
Yeah, no, and he's explosive. He's athletic. I'm a big fan of his, not only because I think he has one of the coolest names around, Ajit Caballero. What a cool name. What a cool name, Ajit Caballero. I like him. He really broke onto the scene on these Riyadh cards with some explosive knockouts, beating Frank Sanchez, which was huge. Mm-hmm. Taking out, who was that big giant
Frankenstein?
Arslan
Makhmudov.
Makhmudov. Yeah, he destroyed him, which I wasn't really high on that guy anyway, but. Frank Sanchez, that was a good win. I was really impressed with that one. I heard something was wrong with Sanchez, though.
Leg. One leg.
Yeah. But regardless, it's a good name on your record. You got a guy who's 24-0, and you stop him. It's a big deal. And Zhilhai Zhang, man, we know what Zhilhai Zhang is all about. You know, we know how he brings it. He's power. He's durability. He's a tank. He's a giant human. Like, he's one of the biggest men I've ever been next to. And he's got a ton of experience. He's been in with the top guys, and Ajit has not. So interesting matchup.
The last five for Zhang, Deontay Wilder, fifth round stoppage. That was in June of
this year. Pretty cool. Last year. Pretty awesome.
Wow.
Pretty awesome.
Joseph Parker.
I helped the team with his diet for that fight, actually.
Good job, because that's a big problem with Zhang, is that sometimes he just doesn't show up. Like,
he was 9 pounds lighter. When he fought for the Deontay fight than he was against Parker.
Parker, that's the fight that sticks in my head when I think about Zhang. It's like, this guy can look amazing, and the Wilder win, I don't put a lot of stock into that. No offense to you and your preparation for him, but it was because Wilder has shown to just have 2 feet out the door, like 10 toes, gone. He's done.
You know, it's unfortunate about Zhang because he has good wins on his record. You know, he's got those two destructions of Joe Joyce, who was undefeated at one point. You know, he has the knockout of Deontay Wilder in a crazy, awesome fashion. You know, he's got these good wins, but you only know him for his losses, right? When you think of Zhang, like you said, I can't get that Parker fight out of my head. Yeah, he underwhelming performance, you know, knocks Parker down several times, but just doesn't throw enough punches. The Filip Ergovic fight, which actually he performed great, and I thought he won that fight. But it's a loss. So you always think of the guy's losses when you bring him up, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the Jerry Forrest fight, where his body completely shut down. It was a draw. His body shut down. He went to the hospital. He was
dehydrated.
Everything. Dehydrated. Like,
that was a COVID fight, because we were in Miami.
Yeah, 2021.
His team first reached out to me after that fight to be like, what's going on? And like, I was like, he was dehydrated, and we're in Miami, and it was his water intake like. So it happens. Big guys, man. It's, you gotta be on
big
top of
tree
that
fall hard.
if a Zhilhai Zhang falls in the woods and no one's there to see it, does it make a sound?
He could fall in this fight. Caballero has a lot of power. A really hard fight to pick. I mean, I love that we're getting these fights, because, you know, we really have to think, and you really have to. I think Caballero could dance around Zhang, and he's got enough power too. But I just think Zhang could catch him too. Like, the thing with Parker is, you know, Parker, similar build to Caballero. They don't exactly fight the same way, but, you know, 6'3", 80-inch reach, can move around. That's Caballero. Parker's right around there, maybe a little bit shorter.
Yeah, Parker has a crazy gas tank.
Right, we don't know about Caballero's gas tank. We don't know too much about him.
We also don't know about his chin.
But here's the thing.
I'm going Zhang. I'm going Zhang about knockout.
Zhang knockout?
Yep.
Okay.
Too durable, too durable, too powerful.
Zhang knockout, you can get that for plus 220.
Yep. That's not Zhang a crazy decision, number, so.
I don't think this is going to the distance. Zhang decision plus 650. Caballero decision plus 240. Caballero knockout plus 175.
Oh, so that's where they're putting their money.
Yeah, the money is on Caballero. He's the favorite.
Zhang's never been stopped, and he's got a great chin. He's fought big punchers.
I like Zhang KO impressive. As well.
Yeah.
I like Zhang stoppage. Late stoppage, fun fight, get that at plus 220. He can, at that point, you know, he's in the mix.
I think Zhang stoppage either early or middle. I don't think it goes that long. I think his power is shocking enough, and he's a bit of a front runner in terms of his gas tank. So I think he hurts him and gets rid of him.
Now you can get take a look at the round betting when it comes to that middle rounds. If you really want to get specific on Zhang, if you want to add, because plus 220 is pretty good value for a knockout, especially for a guy like Zhang, who's a knockout puncher. We already talked about Shakur and Padley. Let's go over to middleweights. Hamzat Shahraz versus Carlos Adames. Also, getting overlooked. Really fun fight. Middleweight division that has been dormant, that has been one of the worst divisions in boxing. We're finally getting a unification bout, believe it or not. It's Shahraz and Adames, who is a smaller middleweight coming over from PBC land, who has scratched and clawed his way to these types of opportunities. Love that about Adames. Shahraz, I feel like, is a star in the making. The Queensberry's behind him 100%, Riyadh behind him 100%, Vegas behind him minus 300, and Adames minus 300, and Adames at plus 235.
Wow.
I mean, are you really that shocked? Shahraz is a punching machine. He's like Thomas Hearns in there.
I think people are underestimating Adames, man. And we haven't seen Shahraz at this level. We haven't seen him fight. You know, his best win was Amma Williams, and Amma Williams was a pretty untested guy himself. So, interesting. Listen, don't get me wrong. I'm huge. I'm very, very hype on Shahraz. I think this is what I say about this fight. Shahraz is the future, but is the future now? That's the question, because we haven't seen it there. I think in a couple fights, no question, I got Shahraz going in this fight and doing it not necessarily easily, but like hands down, I'd bet the house on it. This fight, the fact that it's happening now, is it too much too soon? That's the question, because I think ultimately his future, 100%, he is the future rather of the division. But is he ready for that? Is he ready for a Carlos Adames, who is an absolute beast? That guy is a thoroughbred. He is just strong. He looks like a line. He looks like a running back. He's chest and neck and shoulders, and he's super aggressive. It's a good fight, man. It's a good fight. I'm picking Shahraz by decision, but I could see Adames getting the quote unquote upset here, because I can't believe he's actually the underdog as a champion. But yeah,
only 30. I'm going
Shahraz by decision.
Okay, Adames is 30 years old. Thought he was much older. Giving
looks
up
older.
A lot of height here. And not much reach, because according to BoxRec, Shahraz is 6'3 with a 75 inch reach, and Adames is 5'11 with a 73 inch reach. So I don't know how accurate that is. The thing with Adames that gives me pause is the inactivity. We're talking one fight in last year against Gouchet, one fight in 2023 against Julian Williams, one fight in 2022 against Juan Macias Montiel. This is not a murderer's row of opponents. He fought Derevchenko way back in 2021. That was the last
good
time
win.
Two fight.
Good win.
He fought three times in 2021. Didn't fight at all in 2020. I mean, that's not his own doing. That's, you know, his managerial issues, promotional issues, all that. Undersized. Not a lot of fights in the last couple of years. Not the same opponents. These are good, some decent opponents. I just think Shahraz's time is now. Like you said, Chris, that's the question you brought up. Is his time now? I believe so. I think this guy is on the precipice of superstardom in the boxing world. Potential on the short list to fight Canelo Alvarez. I don't know how much longer he'll be at 160. He's a really big 160-pounder. I don't know how he makes that weight to begin with. But Shahraz minus 300 on the money line. Adames by knockout plus 380. Shahraz by knockout, plus 110. Shahraz decision, plus 240. I think Adames is really tough, and I don't see Shahraz getting the stoppage. I think Adames will step it, will go the distance, and Shahraz decision is pretty nice at 240 right now.
Yeah, I think Adames is durable enough. He's shown a pretty good chin. I think he's big enough, strong enough that he does make it, durable enough that he makes it to the end. But I got Shiraz too. Decision. Sure.
The Shiraz decision. I like that one. That should be a fun one too, because middleweight is like, finally we're getting unification battle. Middleweight. You know, Janabek is chirping, tweeting, whoever tweets for him, he's on the outside looking in. So if
whoever tweets for him,
yeah, it's not him. It's just like he tweets like Golovkin used to talk. It's just like he's trying to be that like good guy boogeyman type. No one's really buying that. Shiraz here at middleweight could be the guy at middleweight for a while if he wants to stay there at 25. But you know he's going to explore what else is out there at 168, potentially Canelo fight. A lot on the line here for both fighters, and a division that we've been begging for a unification bout. So we're getting a unification bout at middleweight, and we're getting a unification bout at welterweight with Boots and Stanionis in 2 months. So at least we're getting some movement in two of the worst divisions in boxing, which used to be the best divisions in boxing, Chris.
Yeah, historically, but lately it's been a wasteland. But I think that the guys who are, it gets a lot of a bad rap, but like there are good guys in there. I mean, we've got Shiraz now, who's stepping onto the scene fighting for the first world title. I actually rate Carlos Adamas highly. I know a lot of people don't. Janabek, who's been kind of hit or miss in terms of his performances, is still an excellent fighter. So there are some talented guys at 60. But so we got some good fights. But as long as they fight each other, which it seems like they're going to, the craziness thing is that Lara is still a champion, right? There's Lyndon Lara, yeah. Which is, yeah. That's crazy.
Danny Garcia in his last fight.
That was insane. So that's low-hanging fruit there forever, you know, wins this fight.
Yeah. Like this fight, let's move on to what I think is the best fight on this card. 154-pound fight between Virgil Ortiz, Israel Madrimov. Madrimov coming off of that 12-round scintillating fight performance.
Scintillating, good word.
Scintillating. He did lose to Crawford, but he gave Crawford some really tough rounds. Virgil Ortiz is Virgil Ortiz. You know what he is at this point, a seek and destroy type of fighter. Not really proven at 154. Actually, I take that back. I forgot he fought Boachuk and got dropped twice, but did ultimately win a really close fight. I mean, the odds are all over the place for this one. It's a very. This is the closest money line we have of all the fights here, and it does not surprise me. Ortiz -125, Madrimov +100. Basically a pick 'em type of fight when it comes to the money line. Ortiz knockout artist +330. Ortiz by decision +190. Madrimov, who is technically the underdog in this fight, by knockout, get that at +400. Decision +215. Really tough one. You got a guy in Ortiz who is the younger fighter, who's more explosive, but not exactly proven. We saw some things in that Boachuk fight that gave me a little bit of pause. Then Madrimov, who has a dozen fights, one of them is Terrence Crawford, and he's so tricky. It's a really hard fight. I mean, this is almost like throw it out the window and just watch and not try to pick a winner. But we got to pick a winner.
Yeah, I don't like picking this one. But it's an interesting fight. I see it going one of two ways. So Virgil Ortiz learned from the Boachuk fight, and we see vintage Virgil, like the guy we saw at 147, just pushes the pace, sets a torrid pace, shows a crazy engine, a solid chin, hard punches, tons of body punching, and just kind of withers and breaks away from Madrimov, breaking him down. I don't think he stops him. Probably gets him by decision. I think he's slick enough. He'll survive, and he's big enough too. And so the case in that is that Ortiz sets a pace that Madrimov can't keep and ends up drowning. Or Madrimov, just too slick, too tricky, too clever, and he's big for the weight class. That's a tough combination. Big and tricky and clever. You know, I think he's a very underrated guy. His performance against Crawford was fantastic. You know, if there were people arguing that actually Madrimov won that fight, he showed a lot. But also, how much do you learn going 12 rounds with Terrence Crawford when you've only got a dozen fights? So if you take that into account, we don't know who the hell this guy is at this point. This is likely to be the best version of Madrimov we've ever seen. And Ortiz obviously had a tough time out with Boachuk. We saw some flaws, mainly, not even flaws per se, but we saw some some weakness in him, and not even just the fact that it's his chin, but the fact that, listen, he fought a guy his own size for once. We've never really seen that. He was a bit of a weight bully. At 147, mm-hmm. he was mowing guys down. He was just too big, too strong for every single one of those guys. And even that, his first two fights at 54 were blown up welterweights. So now he fights his first real 54-pounder in Bohochek, and a guy who can really punch. And we saw a different outcome. He gets dropped twice. He has to actually go to decision for once. And Madrimov is a real 54-pounder. He's a big guy. So this is an interesting matchup, and I think it's one of those two fights.
Madrimov, the 12 fights. This is his 13th fight.
Right,
he got the Crawford loss, and he got the draw to Michael Soro. But there's so much of him is so mysterious, right? We don't know his
very
style.
Unknown.
Mysterious. You can't put your finger on it. It's herky jerky. Get you out of your rhythm. Even got Crawford out of his rhythm. He's big, bulky guy, but he's also super athletic. When you see some of the footage come out of his sparring and his training camps, you're like, what the heck? This guy's jacked out of his mind.
And but he does backflips. Right. To warm up.
It's crazy. So it's just such a wild card here. Whereas Virgil, we've seen so much of Virgil, especially at 147. We had like the Bochuk fight. He came out of that. That was a big time learning experience for him. They both have good learning experiences. Madrimov's obviously came against top three pound for pound fighter in the world. You know, Bochuk, no slouch by any means, but he's not Terrence Crawford. I'm leaning towards Virgil Ortiz on points. I think he's just a little bit more dynamic, and you can get that at plus 190 on DraftKings right now. Here's the thing in this fight. Some stats for you. Virgil Ortiz landed 44% of his power shots over his last 10 to 12 fights. That's 12.8 per round. It's a really good number. Madrimov opponents land just 25% of their power shots, 6 per round. Crawford only landed 26% of his power shots. Both career lows for Bud, 4.6 per round. That's a career low for Crawford in his first fight at 154. Madrimov is just... No one looks good against this guy.
No.
I'm not really... This doesn't really back up my case at all.
Well, you're making my case because I'm actually going Madrimov in this fight.
Wow.
Which is crazy for me to go against Virgil Ortiz, because I think we've talked about Virgil on the show. I love Virgil Ortiz. I love everything about him. I love him as a person. I love the way he handles Twitter. I love the way he talks about fights. I love the way they want all the smoke all the time. I love the way he fights. He throws combinations. He walks guys down. He's a great body puncher. He's got an excellent jab. Everything. He literally does everything I like a fighter to do. But I got a bad feeling about this matchup in terms of if I'm going by, you know, who I like.
Oh my God. Wait a second, Chris. I got to interrupt. According to Ring Magazine, Joseph Parker will be fighting Martin Bacoli.
Whoa. I said it. I said I wouldn't be that surprised, dude. I said it.
Oh my God. This is unbelievable.
Parker is a badass.
Congratulations to Joseph Parker for taking this. Martin Bacoli, absolute savage, is going to be flying in on Thursday for a Saturday fight. Parker Bacoli is on.
I hope there's a video of Bacoli doing that belly dance thing that he does when he said yes to when he got this fight.
Damn, that is crazy, man. Boxing is buzzing right now. This is a...
Yo, Joseph Parker, man, tip in my hat. You are a badass.
That's amazing. That's really, really cool. Very rare we get breaking news when we're recording the show, but I just
we basically broke the cancellation of the Dubois fight because I didn't know that. You broke that to me at least.
I broke it to you. I didn't break it. I'm just looking at Twitter. Ring Magazine, 42 minutes ago, announces this. So, I mean, that's tough. But Coley could go in there and take it to Parker. Because he is just very strong. He fights coming forward. He's really tough, Bacoli. Yeah,
do we overestimate him because of what he did to Jared? Because Jared looked horrible last week.
Well, we'll see. That's
not saying that Jared's horrible, but like, you know, maybe this kid was right for the taking, and we're making Bacoli a monster because he got a win over someone that was very hyped up.
Everyone's making Bacoli into the second coming of George Foreman, which we need to pump the brakes on.
Myself included. I've said it. I've actually even said that out loud. Like, I don't really mean that, but...
He's just like jolly, kind of
Foreman-esque. Yeah, there are Foreman-esque qualities about him.
He's jolly. He's large. He's overweight. He throws a lot of punches, comes forward. That could be George Foreman. He could be describing George Foreman. Parker, okay, he's got his work cut out for him. Because Coley does come forward.
Probably looking at like we were preparing for this kind of guy anyway, and we're ready for a world title. We're as good as we're ever going to be. I mean, listen, if you don't take this fight, you don't think you can beat Bacoli ever. On it, if you really look at it, if you're Joseph Parker, if you don't take the Bacoli fight, you're saying I never beat this guy because you are in the best shape you could possibly be in. You're ready for 12 rounds. You were getting ready to fight a puncher. It's on 2 days' notice. This guy's not going to be as fit as he can be. So you're getting the worst version of Bacoli, and you're your best version. So if you say you can't beat this guy now, you can't beat him ever.
Who are you picking for this one? We might as well go with this one.
I'm going Parker.
Parker to stymie Martin Bacoli.
In a stinker, 12 rounds.
Could be a stinker. A lot of excitement right now.
Not a lot of activities going to come from Bacoli. You guys not, you know, obviously not in, wasn't getting, you know, wasn't ready to fight this weekend. And Parker's a hard guy to look good against anyway. So,
have we thought about what Daniel Dubois is going to do next? Like, I don't think it's like a debilitating illness. It could be some flu bug. He is the IBF heavyweight champion of the world. I'm curious to see where he goes.
He'll have time. This is not something he's done. He's a guy who's had a pretty torrid pace recently. He's getting big fights. He is a champion. I think he will get a grace on this one. But yeah, I mean, he's got a belt. You don't have to worry so much about what's next for him.
I'll go with Parker as well. I think he's ready, and he's has shown that he can disarm big punchers, and he's the one that's chilling right now at the hotel.
Although I didn't like what he said. He did an interview. He was like, I think I have a good enough chin to last with Dubois. I didn't like that. I'm like, well, dude, having a good chin. I always say
heavyweight.
No one has a good chin in a heavyweight division because all it takes is one punch. I don't care who you are. You know, it's just, but also, that shouldn't be the mindset. Mindset would be like, I'm too clever. I'm too experienced. I know how to beat this guy. He's too lumbering. I'm too athletic. You know, he's not even going to touch my chin. But it was interesting wording.
Yeah. Well, he's being real. He's like, I'm fighting. I am outgunned half most of the time. I step into the ring with these giants, stepping into the ring with another giant. So Joseph, the legend of Joseph Parker continues. Going back a second, you like Madrimov by decision?
Yeah, it hurts my heart to say it, but I'm going. I like going against you because
we're gonna have to make a head-to-head graphic.
Yeah, it's more fun. And I hate going against Virgil because I like him. Sorry, bud. Sorry, Virgil. I don't know. The matchup. I don't like it.
All right, Chris. Time to talk about the main event, light heavyweight rematch. Artur Beterbiev picked up a majority decision win last time out, just 4 months ago, over Dmitry Bivol. A lot of intangibles in this fight. Adjustments. You talk about adjustments in rematches. Who will make the adjustment? Will Bivol sell out, quote unquote, a little bit more to get a decision? If he does sell out, does that open up himself for some outstanding counters from Artur Beterbiev? The first fight was a very tactical fight. It was a very fun fight, I thought. Was it the all-out war that we thought it would be? No, but it was still a really fun fight. A lot of questions in this one. Will this one be a little more? We'll have more pockets of entertainment, and who will make the adjustments?
I actually expect the exact same fight. I think this is gonna be round 13 with these guys. I don't think either one of them is gonna make major adjustments because listen, it was a close fight. Whoever you had winning the fight, obviously, Beterbiev got the decision. I had Bivol winning the fight. Still very close fight. I think if either guy goes too far away from what they did in the first fight, they're gonna lose wider. I think if Bivol makes any massive adjustments, he can get more chances to get caught. I think of a line from Fight Club. In a long enough timeline, In a long enough timeline, the chances of survival goes to zero. The more time you spend with Beterbiev, the more time there is for him to knock you out. So round 13 through 24... you know, gives more time for him to find that. So I think if Bivol goes out there and makes some sweeping adjustments, I'm going to start faster. I'm going to finish stronger. It's going to leave opportunities for him to be cracked. And yeah, he's fired the first fight, but listen, Beterbiev is a bad, bad dude with crazy power. And I think if Beterbiev makes any massive adjustments, like maybe he tries to start earlier, maybe he doesn't have that long, you know, that rush that he had at the end of the last fight, or he gets clipped early and gets put down, which is something that we were talking about that first fight. So I don't think either guy makes massive adjustments. I think both guys think that they won. Bivol certainly thinks he does. So, and Beterbiev actually did win. So I think both guys are going to go out there and fight the same tactical fight.
I think we will get tiny adjustments. Tiny adjustments will be better be of starting quicker. This is, like I said, it's only 4 months since their last fight. He doesn't have any nagging injuries that we know of. No time off in terms of outside of the ring, no injuries where he can get in there and keep everything moving. In the last 4 months, I'm talking about Beterbiev, who is the 40-year-old in this equation, and Bivol is the younger and more spry of the two. When it comes to numbers, if Beterbiev wants to change anything, it will be getting out to a quicker start in the first six rounds. Bivol outlanded Beterbiev in rounds 1-6, 60-40. And Beterbiev outlanded Bivol in rounds 7-12, 88-73. Now, the thing that really stood out to me was Beterbiev was the more active of the two punchers. 57 punches thrown around for Beterbiev compared to just 35 for Bivol. I expected Bivol to throw more punches.
A lot of those punches were just this. Literally just going, just like he was like,
walking, Beterbiev?
Like Beterbiev, yes. The punches that was a crazy number. I remember that at the end of the fight that, you know, the copy box stats came out and it's like, I was like, he threw that many more punches? How does that make sense? Then I'm just thinking, I'm like, oh, well,
probing jabs.
Did a lot of probing with both hands to kind of put himself into position and moving and getting his head, and like they weren't real punches.
Mm-hmm. Another big stat here is Bivol's jab disappearing. He landed just 58 jabs. In the first fight. It's the third lowest total in his career in a 12-round fight. It's the first time that he's landed under 100 in quite a long time. That's because he was worried about what was going to get coming back his from Beterbiev.
He averages over 100 jabs a fight?
Landed.
Wow.
I don't know if he averages there, but he's the number one jabber in boxing.
That's a wild stat. Wow. I don't think I've ever landed 100 jabs in any fight. That's crazy.
8.4 jabs landed per round, which is number one in boxing for Bivol, plus 17.2 plus minus ranking, which is number three. Opponents land just 6.5 punches. That's third lowest. Those are Bivol's numbers. We know Bivol. He's just incredible. But in this first fight, the reason he lost, and it's up for debate, was because he just didn't do enough in those later rounds. And it's something we talked about in our in-ring breakdown was if Bivol's going to win this fight, he can't just give away the 10th, 11th, and 12th. Mm-hmm. He has to fight like he did in rounds 1-6 and in rounds 7-12. And I think Bivol can do that. He's the fresher of the two. But there's something about Beterbiev. I mean, I picked him to win a majority decision in the first fight and won a lot of money on that. And I don't necessarily think that was the right decision. But there was something about Beterbiev that with his offense and him being able to crack and him being able to change the game plan of Bivol and him being able to get Bivol's attention is really sticking out to me. And I'm leaning towards Beterbiev on points in this one again, because I just think his offense is just a little more dynamic. Like he can come out there and fight the same fight and win again and hurt Bivol, maybe even land flush early. And make Bivol change his mind and throw even less jabs. And when Bivol's throwing less jabs, he's not Bivol. You know, he has to stick to that game plan, in and out, in and out. Something is telling me Beterbiev on points.
I like your analysis. I'm gonna put it this, because these guys have a lot of similarities, even though they seem like they're polar opposites. They're both masters of position. And they position in different ways. And they also are rhythm fighters. Beterbiev doesn't seem like a rhythm fighter, but he is. He's very good at finding your rhythm and then putting his punches on it. Bivol is the opposite. He's very good at setting his own rhythm and getting you off of it. And in terms of positioning, you know, obviously, you know, Bivol, he's got that Eastern Bloc, Russian style, Kozak, you know, in and out style, that Soviet style, excuse me, that in and out where he's got that pendulum step that he makes guys fall off balance. And then Beterbiev, he doesn't have that push pull with his feet. He does with his upper body, but he's positioning you to where he wants. He moves more like a tank, a heavy artillery. He's getting himself into position, takes some time, but once he does, he unleashes. Doesn't matter if you're blocking, doesn't matter if you're getting caught flush or nicked, he's doing damage. So both guys are masters of position. Both guys are rhythm fighters. Now, rhythm is one of those things you can never find it on tape. You can only find it when you're in a ring with somebody. These guys have already been in the ring together, so they know each other's rhythms. And you can deviate somewhat in terms of your style. But I think with in this particular fight, even if Beterbiev is off, because I didn't think that was a Beterbiev performance either. You said that wasn't Bivol when he's not jabbing. Well, I didn't think that was a Beterbiev fight either. But if Beterbiev is off, he still gives the impression that he's winning because he's coming forward. And if Bivol's off, he's not jabbing. And if he's not jabbing, he's not scoring. So even though he's winning position games, he's getting into position where he couldn't, you know, Beterbiev couldn't land. Defense doesn't really get points for judges, but aggression does. So that's where Bivol needs to make an adjustment, is he needs to stay busier with that lead hand. I think that we get a very similar fight. Super, super tactical. Neither guy makes too many big adjustments. And maybe they do. Maybe Beterbiev starts faster, but I bet you he ends slower. You know, or Bivol, you know, the opposite. I think it's going to be a very, very similar fight in terms of that. And I think it's going to be a very close razor decision once again. And I think Bivol is actually going to get it this time. I think he deserved it the first time. I think he's actually going to get recognized for his work this time. And I want to bring up a point. The reason I'm leaning this way, because I was thinking what you were thinking, almost exactly. I was like, he just has this guy. I actually thought Beterbiev was going to knock Bivol out if they fought again. But I thought about how close this fight is to the first one. 40-year-old Beterbiev stacking close camps. I'm telling you, when you get older, when you're an older fighter, it's not the fights that wear you out. It's the camps.
That's a positive.
I don't. I think the wear and tear from the camps leading into the fight, and going 12 rounds is going 12 rounds. Even though that last fight was not a blistering pace, even though neither man took a bunch of damage, you still have to recover from those types of fights. And to go right back into camp at 40 years old, I think that's really... that could play a major role.
So you're going Bivol?
I'm going Bivol decision.
Bivol decision. So right now on DraftKings, Bivol is plus 105 on the money line. He is the underdog. Beterbiev, slight favorite at minus 130. If you're going to take Bivol by decision, you can get that at plus 140. Bivol by knockout, which is very unlikely, plus 1,000. Beterbiev by stoppage, plus 225. Beterbiev by decision, plus 260. I was able to get majority decision. That was plus 700. I wonder if I can still do that.
Oof, plus 700. Yikes.
Yeah, I made out on that fight. I did. I was laughing when the scores were read.
Because you were literally waiting for the scores to be like, damn, I lost that bet. And then you got it.
I think it was, it was also because like I didn't necessarily think Beterbiev won. So yeah, I won the bet, but like everyone was like, you got lucky. I was like, no, I just, you know, I, this time I'm a little more believable. I really think that Beterbiev is going to find the chin of Bivol a few more times. And that's just going to be the difference in what should be a very, very close fight. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I like the way that you bet, because all of my friends who bet are all degenerates. And if they bet a guy, they're living by that bet. And like they've instantly become the fan of that fighter, whether they are or they aren't, based on the fact that they bet. Like you're like, I'm like, I won the bet, but like, I didn't think he won, you know?
It's whereas kind of crazy
my other friends are like, he definitely won. You don't know anything. I'm like, oh, shut up.
Yeah. Like I know I was wrong there, or it was close. It was very close. I thought Bivol won. It's like, it's funny because that was one of my biggest bets of the year outside of the tank, the KO.
The round eight. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a good year for gambling. It's a good year. This is it's a lot of juicy picks here on this whole fight card. I cannot believe Martin Bacoli has stepped in to fight Joseph Parker. That makes this card was I wouldn't say it was like faltering.
It was in trouble.
Schofield, it was just like the best card of all time on paper. And then Schofield falls out, and then you're seeing a few dents in the armor there. And then you have Dubois fall out, who's the heavyweight champion, and a lot of people looking forward to that. And you have Bacoli just step right in. This is the beauty of Saudi Arabia. This is the beauty of Turkey with a massive checkbook, able to do this. And shout out to the fighters. Most importantly, it's about the fighters. Most importantly, this is about Martin Bacoli stepping in, and this is about Joseph Parker accepting a guy in Bacoli on short notice. Don't ever, I don't want to give too much credit to promoters, but it's always about the fighters in my mind first. And man, it's going to be some day of fighting. Seven fights. Good God. That's a lot of fights, Chris.
A long afternoon. I don't mind them. I like these mega cards when they're early. As long as we don't run late. But this is a Tour de France of boxing on a Saturday. You got to have your electrolytes ready. You got to have your sports drinks. Yeah, you got to get your feet up. You got to get comfortable. You're going to be there for a while.
Let us all know where you'll be watching from. I'll be all over social media. Hopping in the PBB chat.
I have no clue where I'm going to be. No clue.
Yeah, Chris doesn't know. Right now he's dealing with some stuff. So we'll be watching in some capacity, and we'll be talking about it all day Saturday. Enjoy the fights. Chris, me and Chris going head-to-head. We'll put out some graphics, and if you're going to gamble, have fun with that. There should be some fun money to be made.
And if Virgil Ortiz is listening, I'm sorry, bro. I'm sorry, I went against you.
That's a big
regardless,
one.
Regardless of what happens, I'm sorry, I went against you.
That's a big one. Enjoy the fights. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. See you, everybody.